Hello, everyone. Welcome to Universal Energy Radio. This is The Lois Effect. My name is Elisa.
My name is Liz, and I'm a little confused. I just this second got a text from my son's school. Okay, sorry. You're receiving this message because we found out this morning that someone in one of your child's classes yesterday was found to be positive for COVID. If your child was considered a close contact, but how do we know? How do we know if you're not telling me who the kid is? Meaning closer than 3 feet or unmasked, you will receive a phone call from the school shortly. Okay, that hasn't happened yet. And be provided with directions if you need to quarantine. Out of an abundance of caution, because you were within the same classroom, we recommend that you get a PCR test, although this is not required.
Okay.
Yeah, but it takes 5 days. I mean, this happened literally as I'm calling into the show, like at the same time, like not even 5 minutes ago, so I apologize. We recommend that you get a PCR test, although this is not required. Yeah, but then it takes like 3 to 5 days to get the results of a PCR. I'm not doing anything. What am I supposed to do? Okay, thank you. All right. Good morning.
Wow.
That, okay. Yep. Good morning. Okay. Yeah. It's like, damn, do they go to school, damn, do they don't. Okay. Oh, my God.
And Raven had typed in the chat earlier. She said, would you please keep my four-month-old great-grandson in your thoughts and prayers?
Oh.
He was taken to another hospital yesterday, Akron's Children's, with pneumonia and COVID.
No,
yeah.
I can't. Oh, four-month-old baby?
Yeah. So.
Ouch. Raven, girl. Okay, let's just take a few seconds right there just to send love and energy to this beautiful, innocent, God-like being. Hold a little space. Okay. Raven, I'm so sorry. That's like, nobody wants to. All right. Happy Tuesday.
Right. Wow.
Oh, Raven, girl. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. So. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So that's. Yes, it feels a little like we've regressed a little bit with our progress, or so the illusion of progress, or whatever you want to call it. We talked about it the last show, with what's going on in the air, in the streets, in life. I mean, we're still moving forward. We're still pressing on. It's not like we're getting, I mean, I don't really pay, we're not the best news source, since Elisa nor myself pay close attention to the news. So I don't know if there's any hint of this is getting so crazy that we're going to risk lockdown, but I think everything's being ruled by money, so I doubt that that would happen again. But who knows? Yeah, that's a four-month old baby. Oh my God. And yesterday, and again, grief, as all of us know from having experienced various forms of losses over our whole lives, you know, we know grief is something that's out of our control. It's something that I choose to yield to honor it, to move through it, to know that, to have faith that I'll get to the other side of it, that there's a wisdom to it, there's a purpose to it. But it is very unpredictable, and not to be controlled and manipulated or what have you. But I felt like yesterday, although my mother is, you know, with us, and she's in beautiful spirits with a beautiful attitude. And she, the last two times that I saw her, they were quote unquote good days for the situation. But we are slowly beginning the onboarding process for additional comfort care, palliative care services, which I would think eventually would morph into a hospice situation. So all of that just, you know, and you have no idea of the time frame.
Right.
It could be a week. It could be 2 years. I have no idea. I have no idea. But I felt like yesterday was the first day that I'm beginning to grieve her, or that the grieving process has started. Because it just took me completely by surprise that once I did my due diligence with the home visit and my siblings and my mother and everything else, and I went on to the day that was a work day, but in between moments of obligation, I was grieving. And then I also realized that my mother is now, no, that I am now the age that my mother was when I had lost my daughter.
Mm.
And that was such a full circle, because the first major family member I ever lost wasn't my parents. My mother's still here. My father died, I don't know, 8-9 years ago. It was my daughter.
Right.
So first I lost my daughter. Then I lost my father, which was just 2 weeks of just, I felt weird, and then I moved on because I didn't really form a serious bond with him growing up or what have you. And just basically what he put my mother through. So that was not a difficult grieving at all.
Yeah.
But the order is off. You know, so my daughter, my father, and, you know, my mother is in the wings for whenever her time is her time. Connection provoked some sort of grief response. When I made that realization, then I said to myself, I don't think my mother will be, I mean, that it's fine, but I don't think that my mother will be here when I turn the next age after, from that. So it just really made me think, like, wow, I remember all of that so vividly. And what she had to deal with you know, her first grandchild, you know, dying after a few days. Mm-hmm. And we were in her home. You know, I was recovering there because the apartment that she lived in back then was the apartment I grew up in, which was palatial and fabulous and amazing. And I was living in a tenement. With not the best provider of a husband, which, you know, is fine. That's, at that stage, I thought, oh, we moved past that, you know, and we sort of did a little bit. But then, you know, other things fell apart, and now no longer together by choice, thankfully. But it really gave me pause to think of, wow, looking at, remembering her so vividly at that stage in life, looking at myself, and it just triggered a guilt, not a guilt, grief response.
Mm.
You know, but I honored it, and I didn't let it devastate me. I just let it flow through me. I embrace it. I said, this is growth, and you move through it, and it, there's a ripple effect with all other areas in your life, the more that you face it head on. And it literally is akin to ripping off a Band-Aid. It's so brief. That pain is so much more temporary than being stuck in the pain of resistance to justify your discomfort and not crossing the threshold to for new things or new challenges, new experiences, explorations, whatever. So, interesting what's in the air. So I can tell you, literally and figuratively.
Oh, true. True.
Anyway, there you go.
Oh. Well, you know, I'm paying attention. I'm paying attention because, you know.
I know. I know you are.
Know.
I know. I know you are. Because it's a definite phase. It's a new chapter. You can tell. Like, I never talked about my mother like this before.
Right.
And then here we are. Boom. Yeah, and I'm grief response. What really complemented it, the gratitude, because the last couple of times I've seen my mother, she was not in chronic pain. Thank you, Jesus. Her demeanor, her attitude, her graciousness, her sweetness, you know, she's still pretty much with it. You know, I will tell her, I will spin a yarn or two about my antics, and she will laugh. Oh, and then on Saturday, in less than 12 hours, my son, my younger son, smuggled a dog and then a girl.
What?
I told my mother the story. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Never a dull moment in my life. Mm-mm. Oh, yeah. I mean, he didn't get away with any of it. Hello, have we met? I'm his mother. Oh, yeah. But how I find out who's, like, in my house, because there's always a house full of people in my house. I mean, I know who they are. Vaccinated, whatever. I mean, this is such a shit show. Who knows from one moment to the next. But I always check in the hallway. Because I prefer when people come over that they take off their shoes because the streets are nasty in New York.
Oh, yeah.
So I just check. Yeah, I just check. Like, okay, I look at the footwear. So there's always like, it looks like a sneaker shop, right? There's like 500 pairs of sneakers. And I'm like, oh, okay, he's there. And I recognize who's here by their shoes. So Saturday afternoon, you know, because these kids stay up all night and, you know, sleep till the afternoon. So on Saturday, I'm in and out, whatever. I come home. I see what looks like a little stroller. I'm like, what the hell? What the hell? Why is there a little stroller in my house? I don't want to see no stroller in my house. I don't want to see no stroller. No. I will get you a case of condoms and Plan B abortion pills. Okay? Like, no. I'll put that in your Christmas stocking. No. So I'm seeing this little stroller. I'm like, what the hell is this? It turned out it was a dog stroller, because that's a thing. People in New York City with their little, you know, I'm a pet parent. Like, okay, no shade. Okay, that's nice. But I'm seeing a stroller. Thank God it was not a human stroller, but it looked like one, a tiny version of one. So I pound on the door. I see Jeremiah and his friend, who are adults because they're 18 or over. Jeremiah has historically always had friends a little bit older than him. And I see this poor little dog that's whining away. And I'm like, this is like the worst bad comedy movie ever. I'm like, what is this, dumbest than a dog? What the hell? So they thought, some friend needed them to babysit. It was just some screwball, stupid comedy, whatever. And finally, Jeremiah returns the dog while his friends are still. I told his friends, I'm like, this isn't Jeremiah's house. This is my house. I don't want no dog here. And as much as I honor and I welcome you, I won't think twice about throwing people out of my house. I'm showing you respect. You need to show me respect. Not a good idea. Okay, nobody's asking me permission about anything. So I read them. I checked them. And that night, my older son and I had gone out to see a friend of ours in a show that ran very late, whatever. So we got home later than expected, checked the hallway. I see a pair of Uggs. I'm like, oh, I know none of his homies wear Uggs. These are some girl Uggs.
Yeah.
I'm like Jessica Fletcher in Murder, She Wrote. And I go pound on the door. And they're just so cute and so comfy. And I'm just cracking up to myself because there's this, and I met her before. She's a cool, nice young girl. But it's almost 1 o'clock in the morning and she's in there with her fake eyelash. I just laugh. The eyelash, it looks like she's wearing black caterpillars on her eyes. the black eyelashes. Oh, it's a thing. The eyelashes, it's such a thing. It makes me laugh because they're so exaggerated. So I go, oh, this is cozy. And I wanted to say, are you enjoying the honeymoon suite? I didn't say that, but that's what I wanted to say. I should have, you know, done turn down service and put a mint on the pillow, but I'll put the Plan B pill on the pillow. And I'm like, how old are you? She's 16. I'm like, okay, well, as long as you guys are under 18, I'm the responsible adult. And I said, does your guardian, because I don't presume anything, does your guardian know I'm here without flinching? Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, well, I would never send anyone out of my home in an unsafe situation, and it's almost 1 in the morning. So we will deal with this tomorrow. And I was like, okay, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Send her out home to go back to Harlem at 1 o'clock in the morning? No, not going to do that. What's done is done. I'm like, Jeremiah, you're giving me some good bookends because between you and your mother, you and my mother, I'm losing my damn mind, you know, plus holding it all together. Okay, next day comes. Great advice, as I always do for my girlfriend, Deborah, who listens to the show, who's called in a few times. I tell her, and she gave me great advice. She said that she had permission. She needs to prove it. So she told me what to do. So what I did was, I'm like, oh, my God, thank you. Because sometimes you need advice from somebody who's not in the situation, who's also a badass parent. who takes control, and Debbie doesn't play ever. So she gave me great advice. Pound on the door. So I go to this girl and said, oh yeah, so you told me that your mother knows that you're here? She goes, yeah. I said, give me your number. And without flinching, she gave me the phone number. I'm like, I like this girl. She's looking me dead in the eye. She's being respectful. Apparently, she answered honestly. They're not trying to play me-ish, because they always try to play you. I dialed the number. And then I was hurt. The sound of this woman, I'm like, oh, my God. This woman is such a broken person. It was so sad. I don't know if she was under the influence, or she's very ill, or whatever, but she sounded like someone who's given up and someone that just doesn't have the energy to just go past the bare minimum of functioning, just from my brief exchange with her mom. Mm. And I just said, well, as a parent, I have my number, I have yours, your daughter is safe, you know, I just didn't want anyone to be worried, I know how much I worry. So we had a very civil conversation. I'm sure no one has ever called her in that sort of progressive, supportive kind of way, you know. I put her daughter on the phone, whatever exchange they had, and then I just let them be. Oh, before I left, I had the whole, like, safe sex. There's no reason for anyone to get pregnant. That's not going to happen. Like, and she's like, oh, no, my family tells me, like, there's no reason, not an option. I'm nice, but I'm not stupid.
Mm.
Yeah. So this is like a day-to-day. So it's crazy. And how are kids supposed to feel safe going to school when every 5 minutes there's another case of COVID in the school?
Right.
And everyone's vaccinated. Yeah. So why would they feel like going to school, or they're late every day, or like in the case of my son, you know? And I know my son's not the only weird kid in the New York City public school system, you know, functioning at this level of adapting to the best of what he feels like right now. I know there are more extreme cases. There has to be. But what a shit show. I have to turn in my grades. This is the last week of me teaching at NYU until the spring.
Mm.
And we're just holding the intention that they invite me back. I know they will, but they haven't officially invited me back, it doesn't start till February, so I'm sure I'll hear something. But the absences were out of control. And this is, you know, not mandatory to go to college and spend $50,000 or whatever it is to go to school now.
Right.
And NYU is one of the most expensive in the country. The absences were loose, and we're getting these instructions about, you know, how to the degree do we factor in the absences? How does that reflect in the grade? They're being way more lenient, as I would imagine every other academic institution is considering to be. I don't know. But, yeah, I'm not gonna factor absences, because that has nothing to do with intention. Or I'm not going to factor it that way. It's a weird – there's no baseline for this.
Mm.
You know? It's weird. And just when we thought we could, sort of take steps to reemerge, which happened in September, with the start for everybody with in-person classes, how well is that working out? It's only December. Let's see, September. Yeah, 4 months in, and we already have a variant. I don't know. I mean, what? I don't know. How do you be a devoted, responsible parent in the middle of a shitstorm?
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. So there you have it. That's where we are. And it's exhausting. So, in between things, I just build in meditation time, nap time, reflection time. Yeah, I put that in my schedule now. Like, where are my windows where I can just be for the next day? It's a lot. Anyway.
Well.
Oh. I know, right? What is there to say? Anyway, I'm just depleted. But, you know, but as I said before, with the immense gratitude that I feel, forgiveness that I feel, Yeah, that really is a result of feeling all these things head on and moving to the other side, because I'm feeling so less drawn to judge, and I'm more drawn. My default setting is shifting from judging to forgiveness. That's evolution. That's growth. You know, like, am I going to be dyeing my, you know, my robe saffron, and am I going to go to Tibet and hang out with the Dalai Lama, because I'm all about seeing the beauty in everything. Like, it's just, even with my mother's decline, just seeing the beauty in her demeanor, just that everyone's doing the best that they can, and to see the beauty in that, or the beauty and the appreciation that my children are healthy and safe. I'm going to tap into that, as opposed to how many latenesses is my son going to have? I mean, how often do I think about my sophomore year of high school? Never. Not that it's not important and that there's due diligence, but I'm just tapping into the energy and the frequency of the fundamentals that are enduring, excuse me, and what I'm tapping into. But it's, yeah, I don't know how back we really are. It feels very strange right now. I don't know. I feel like we're just holding on. I am just seeing the beauty of what's happening. And that's replacing the fear.
That's
although
good.
The fear is there. But,
of course.
Yeah. Yeah, what else, yeah. What else can we do? Right. What else can we do? And yes, and I told my older son that one of his birthday gifts is going to be a reading with you. He's very excited.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah,
I'll
yeah.
make a So I'll make make arrangements with you, maybe for you to contact him, and that I'll Venmo you or whatever. But see, great holiday gift. Thank you. somebody. I think on two or three occasions, I was like a gift certificate for readings for people. So it's, and I know you have also. Like, I think that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll figure that out.
Oh, that's cool. I love that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe, you know, just sort of continuing on with, I think around the holidays, you know, a lot of people are not in the best of moods, and usually it has to do with because someone's passed, or, you know, just dealing with that loss of, you know, not having somebody around for the first holiday, you know, or whatever.
Right.
One of my old classmates, I may have mentioned this, passed away unexpectedly.
Mm-hmm.
And so his memorial service was back in Charleston on Saturday. And of course I wasn't able to go. I was working. But what's been interesting to me is seeing, he had a really good group of friends, a really close group of friends from, you know, from elementary school and, you know, middle school and high school, you know, a lot of us just sort of stayed together. And, so some of his closest, oldest, dearest friends, were also just kind of expressing their grief on Facebook, which I thought was interesting. Because
mm-hmm.
these were,
yep.
you know, these were like the Hellraiser type dudes, you know, growing up, you know, they were all definitely mischievous but I really, like, I could really appreciate their connectedness to him and to his family,
mm-hmm.
you know, his sons, his younger brother, his parents, they're just always mentioning him. they're putting up pictures, which, I know his sons are saying, please, you know, please post more of these because, you know, we don't have a lot of this stuff. You know, we don't see it. So everyone's sort of pitching in. All of our friends are like, oh, I remember putting up stuff from, you know, middle school. Like, wow. You know, these are – or elementary school. I saw one from our elementary school. It's like class pictures and things like that. So I think it's interesting to get at different ages, you know, like you know, with you having had a loss early on, in your 20s with, you know, with the closest, right? I mean, well, with the one that you were mentioning,
no,
with your daughter.
Yeah, I was actually in my early 30s when she passed.
Oh, okay.
Yes, but in my 20s, I lost my ex-boyfriend to AIDS, and that's kind of how I ended up with my ex-husband. So not the best reason. And I was in my 20s when that happened. I was in my early 30s when my daughter died.
Right. So I haven't had anyone really close to me pass until, I guess early 30s, late 20s. That was my grandmother. As far as family goes, now I've had friends and parents of friends pass away when I was like a teenager. So, and I think I know I've mentioned at least one of those memorial services being such an eye opener in terms of grief and how you can remember people. This was one of my best friends from high school. Her father was a doctor. He was actually looking for a cure for his type of cancer, which I didn't really know I didn't even know he had it until he was not in remission anymore. And I was a sophomore in college. I had no idea that he'd had lymphoma. I had no idea. He was always just the life of the party. He was just an amazing, funny guy. Because he knew he had, you know, he had the condition. He had it for a while, and he's been trying to, you know, look for cures. But he knew that his days were going to come up at some point. So he had planned out his service. You know, he knew the music he wanted. He knew the people he wanted to speak. And it was, you know, obviously we were all sad, but it was also, we were all laughing, you know. And I thought, here I was at like, how old was I? 19, thinking, if, you know, when it's my time to go, this is how I would love for people to gather. You know, if they're going to gather in remembrance, you know, it's okay to obviously shed those tears. But I mean, he was, like I said, he had such a great sense of humor that it would be odd to not laugh at some point, you know, in remembering him.
Right.
I just thought it was such a beautiful, service. And so I just kind of tucked that away thinking, you know, I've been to others since then. And that was more like, I guess what you see like on TV or, you know, that grieving and the awkwardness, but it was such an opening, of the heart.
Mm.
That was the only way I could describe it. So to have someone, even as his, you know, last days, having that planned out, and the effect was long lasting. I mean, this is, you know, when I was like in my late teens, so I remember that.
Yeah,
and I'm not even really close with his daughter anymore. We've kind of grown apart. But I still remember him, you know, and that,
of course,
that is that type of energy that I would love to keep going.
Yes, hold space to that. Yes, absolutely.
Pretty long lasting, you know. So those were the sorts of standards. So I feel like when we're like talking with about my classmate who passed away, that's sort of what his friends are doing. Like, they're definitely grieving.
Yes, of course.
But they are posting, you know, so many memories from recent memories of when the last time they got together, they all got together, to like, you know, when they were grade school kids, you know, and all those stages in between, just different every day. This one guy in particular, who doesn't live too far away from Charleston, but he's not in that area anymore. He's just pouring his heart out, you know. Those two were just together all the time. I'm just seeing that, and it is sad. It's sad, but you know, the stuff he's posting is still like, like most people have been like, you know, you never know when it's your last time. So hug your friends, you know, the people, your loved ones, all those things. And it's just an interesting reminder. But like I said, you know, when I see guys, they don't usually express their grief. So
right.
To have a band of brothers, so to speak, who are,
that's beautiful, actually.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I was picking up on, was, or that's what I was just noticing. I was like, these were really tight friends, you know, and they loved each other. They looked out for each other, all these years, you know, from grade school on up.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
And there are things I didn't know about my friend. Like, I didn't know he had a younger brother. I assumed his brother was older, but it turned out, and this last piece of information came, I think, either like today or yesterday. I'm like, oh, because his brother was born like when he was 20 years old. So,
oh, that's why.
So, it's like, well, no wonder I never heard about a brother.
Hello.
Right. Where is it? So I always figured it was because he was an older brother, but no, it's a younger brother. And so I think his brother is like the age of close to in age to his own sons, because he got married, in his 20s. So it's just been, I'm learning things about people that I felt like I knew pretty well.
Right.
But
right.
In hindsight, I'm like, yeah, I guess I didn't know them, you know, that well. But I knew enough of them. I knew enough to say, you know, I definitely considered him a good friend. And, So, you know, as people are looking on Facebook, they're like, oh, when did this happen? You know, I was the same way. I'm like, what? You know, the shroud of mystery and all that. Because I found out, I think, the next day. But nothing was official. So finding these different ways of grieving, and I just think growing up and I guess not being around it as much until I was a teenager. And then it was like mostly peers or parents, one parent, really just one parent that I attended the funeral of someone who, a friend of mine, who passed away. It was just interesting to see how, I think when we're older, we're like, you know what, this is what it feels like. and you have so many other things to feel, you have, I guess, words, or you have ways to express it, or you allow yourself to express it. In the case of guys, I didn't think, you know, would ever do that, but it's bittersweet. It's beautiful. It's sad, but it is something that, we all have to go through. And the more we do it, the better. It just means that. You start to take that time to, prioritize or to review what's really important. In light of, like, this guy, my classmate, same year, same age as me. And, I saw pictures, someone posted pictures of him, And I'm like, that's who I remember. At first, I thought it was a picture of his older brother that I saw. It was him holding. I was like, oh, his older brother looks just like him, but it was him holding his baby brother. I'm like, okay,
that makes sense.
Like, I don't know how these genes work in families, and everyone kind of looks the same, but yeah. So I'm learning, or maybe just remembering, that you can be all these things. You can be, you know, strong and tender and sad and still loving.
Yeah.
You can do all those things. Angry and still, you know, whatever has to come through. Raven put, grief can make us stronger. Very true. And she also wrote in here, she said, thank you. I didn't sleep well last night. Something about this is giving me anxiety. She's talking about her great grandchild. So thank you for your prayers. She says, keeping you in my thoughts and prayers, Liz. The holidays are the hardest days to go through with grief.
Yep.
I feel if you need to cry, scream, do whatever is needed to acknowledge it, don't put it aside. It needs to be addressed.
Oh, absolutely. I submit to that, mistress. Absolutely.
Yeah. Know that no one is ever alone. Your mother is always surrounded with her angels and loved ones preparing her for her next journey.
Yep.
As are our angels
and
guides. So
that's right.
Yeah.
That's comforting. Thank you, Marguerite, because, you know, I'm considering the beautiful source that that's coming from. So thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oof.
Are you taking calls today? Yes, I see there's a hand raised. So, Kay, I don't know if this is you on the phone, but we'll find out. This is area code 919.
Hello? Hi, it is Kay. Hi, it is Kay. Yeah, I just chimed in, and I'm like, okay, I don't want to use the wrong format, but I was just listening.
No, it's fine. Of course you can. Great. So, hi. So, what's going on? How can we help?
It's my question is around career. I got some disappointing news yesterday, and I say disappointing because I had really a lot of hope, which I hate that word, but I had put a lot of hope and faith in this particular position. It was a wonderful interview, and I guess at the time, I guess I knew, my intuition let me know that it's been too long, but I still just wanted to hold on to a little bit of ray of something. The recruiter was amazing, and I reached out to her again, and she said, you know, she apologized for the delay, but the team really liked me so much. But they had gone with another candidate, and so they were trying to see if there was something else within that the company or somewhere that I could fit. And she was very hopeful, and for that I am eternally grateful. I truly am, period, no but. What I will say is when you're in the middle of a rainstorm, the last thing you want somebody to tell you is you're getting wet or it's raining. You want somebody to bring you an umbrella or help you. So all of the niceness that I'm getting from everyone is so greatly appreciated. I'm just wondering when my true next opportunity is coming. My present role, I'm trying my best to shift all the energy I have. I can just say that this job is taking its toll on me mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and I am trying and working, doing the work to shift that. It's just so difficult.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, of course. But let's go back to the recruiter. So is that door permanently shut, or they have the intention that they're going to see where there's a place for you? Like, I'm not clear.
For the position that I applied for, that one is closed. Someone was hired. But they are looking if something should become available. Even encourage me to look, too, continually.
Right. So let's, so there's potential. And also there's potential, there's viability, meaning that you're a viable candidate, that you know, the idea of the first position that they gave to somebody else has nothing to do with you, has absolutely nothing to do with you, because why would they be so impressed with you to look to see if they could fit you into this Rubik's Cube if you were not worth the investment and energy? So you got to look at this as every no leads to a yes, that there is viability, that there was potential, that there was that you presented yourself in an exceptional enough manner that there has been serious consideration. The recruiter is looking on your behalf.
Yes.
And the challenge is really to redefine your relationship with time. And let me just ask you, how what is your relationship with time? How do you perceive time?
Right now, while I'm in this uncomfortable job.
Just in general. No, just in general. I'm not talking about the story. I'm not talking about the facts. I'm talking about with time. Some people have a very poor relationship with time. They don't know how to manage their time. They're always late. Some people manage time as almost an art form where they can really see the general. So I'm asking you, not about the story, not about the job, not about what is your relationship with time?
I tend to be ahead.
Yes, I knew that. So you know how to manage your time.
I tend to manage it very well, and
I knew
I'm
that.
Always ahead. Yeah.
So trust that that your relationship with time and how and that shows respect, that shows responsibility, that shows organization, that shows logical thinking. These are all very desirable traits to be employable. Yes or no?
Correct. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, right. So that's why because I knew the answer to that question, but that's why I asked you. Mm-hmm. That's why I asked you the question. And is time something that controls you? Yes or no? Are you controlled by time?
Yes. Yes.
Are you controlled by time?
I'm not controlled by time.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, you're not controlled by time. Right. So what I suggest is don't put yourself into the illusion of being controlled by time, because you're getting, you know, your focus, right? Your focus is, you're sort of falling into that illusion, you know, because all of a sudden time isn't cute anymore because you don't like your job. That's not time's fault. And you weren't given a prison sentence. Okay, right now, you are doing the dirty work of growth. People run away from that all the time. It's what I was talking about. The pain that you're feeling now is going to be the source material for the alchemy, for the lead to turn into gold. And the wisdom that you're gaining. So if anything, look at your viability. Stay in touch with the recruiter. Keep looking. This is temporary. The storm shall pass. It's not forever. Nothing lasts forever. Everything changes. So, but right now you're getting a check, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, yes. Yeah. So flip everything to gratitude. I am grateful for this check. I am grateful for my health that I can get to this job. I'm grateful for my stamina and resolve to get through this job that is not my ideal at the moment, but I'm grateful. That's how you're going to get out of that job, by loving it in gratitude. Not pretending to love the job, but to love yourself enough to be grateful. You know, and it's a tough lesson. Like, my mother's dying. I'm grateful that she's so graceful about it. I'm grateful that she lit up when I made her soup. I'm grateful that she wasn't in chronic pain the last time I saw her. I'm grateful that I can really grow from this. I'm grateful that I'm showing her, as my other siblings, that she raised four very nice, smart, kind, generous people, and that's her legacy, and I will do the same for her two grandchildren. You follow what I'm saying? So in the pain and in the discomfort, nobody wants to go through these things, like a dissatisfactory job or a dying parent that is adored or what have you. Nobody wants to go through that. But we got to go through it. And where I was so quick in the past to judge my siblings, I'm like, I'm not judging them anymore. I'm grateful for them. I'm not the only sibling having to deal with all the responsibilities with my mother. There's three of us in New York that are sharing and doing excelling in the areas that we do best at, part my mother, and where we didn't get along at all growing up. We are being so kind and supportive and generous and not fake, just accepting who we are and our differences and having the common goal of my mother's comfort. As much as we're all freaking out and dealing with our own private journeys with that. So for you, you're strong. This is about your growth. And if you tell yourself this discomfort is temporary, this is getting me ready for the next better thing, it may not be the thing that you imagined. But the fact is, you are hireable. You just got proof in the universe that you're a viable, hireable candidate. You know? Keep looking. But to be deflated by a job, you know what? It's like that job's not the boss of you. That job is a trap, you know, and maybe find a way to work smarter, not harder. Maybe don't work as hard. Don't toil. Do your job, but don't toil at it. You don't have to. Maybe the universe is saying to you, there's another way of looking at this. You don't have anything to prove to anyone there except whatever expectations and professionalism that you need to offer to earn that check and to be proud of your work. But to split your focus on what this person is thinking of that one or whatever, that's judgment. Who cares? You know, I go to the church of forgive them for they do not know what they do. I'm just forgiving everybody and seeing the beauty in everything. Because that's the only way I'm not going to lose my damn mind with what's going on. With the chaos of life right now. So it's your choice. So it's not a matter of when, it's a matter of your grace in all of this. And in your dedication to finding gratitude and loving yourself and factoring yourself. I believe energetically is what I'm picking up, is that your default setting has been for most of your life to put everything and every else before you. Would that be a fair energy read right now?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, that is true. So this discomfort, you're just not used to it. I'm not used to it. I'm learning. I have to be strong for my mother and for my kids and for my profession. You know, I can't even get a cold right now. So I'm doing things to just keep my immune system strong, keep myself strong, giving myself breaks, meditating, doing yoga, little 10-minute break here, 5-minute break just throughout the day, honoring myself, keeping my circle very, very tight. I felt like I got hit by a truck. So after several hours with my mother and the healthcare provider that we're starting the onboarding, as I said before. And I had to teach a class on Zoom for 3 hours last night and other things in between. But I blocked like 2 hours of just, I'm going to be in bed for 2 hours before I cook dinner and before I teach at night. And during that 2 hour period, I received 2 phone calls. And I took the calls because these are 2 people that I feel very safe and very close to. And when both of them asked me how my mother was, I was silent for a good 30 seconds. I couldn't even speak. But they were holding space for me, and I felt safe, and it was okay. If there was some other random person calling or a work thing or what have you, I would have let it go to voicemail and then returned the call when I felt more together a few hours later. So that's honoring. So these are things for you to start. I would give you like a little, just a little bit of, you know, a prescription here to find ways to honor yourself to get through the day so that you're shifting your focus to your wellness so that you are feeling less burdened and less heavy at work. So if that means you're going to get there 15 minutes early before anybody else is there, just to compose yourself, whatever it is that you need to do, or you're going to take a walk during your lunch break, or you're going to get yourself a little treat, whatever it is, or you're going to go to the restroom and just close the door and take 10 deep breaths, in between to get through, because that's your direct access connection to source. Just taking 5 deep breaths in a stall in the bathroom. So do you see how these are little baby steps to shift the focus so that you, instead of tapping into the illusion, this is to propel you for your growth and for what's next. If you look at this like, oh, this is just a stepping stone. Okay, I can deal with the stepping stone because the stepping stone isn't forever. It's temporary. How long are you at this job?
This one, not long. 6 months. When I first started, nothing that was promised has been delivered. And it's just,
well, who cares? We're not talking about that. Who cares? Who cares? You deliver to yourself. Who cares? You don't like the job. You don't want to stay there. So better that they didn't promise. You would have outgrown it.
Yes.
They did you a favor. You follow what I'm saying? It's like,
yes.
It's like I have a husband, but he beats me, but I wanted a husband. Excuse me. Right?
Yes.
So look past, tell yourself, this is an illusion. This is teaching me. What am I learning? How can I shift my perception? What can I be grateful about this situation? So I'm going to, so list 3 things about the job right now that you can express gratitude for. Let's go. What's like number 1?
Number 1 would be that I work remotely, so that gives me time.
Oh, hello,
you
you're working at home. Thank you. Hello, yeah. You're working remotely. Yay. That's a beautiful one. You don't have to go to an office with people you don't like.
Right.
That's huge. Okay, thank you. What's number 2?
Number 2 is the salary that I have has afforded me to get my own place that I needed.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, job. Thank you, job. I work remotely and the money has helped me, elevate my situation. Okay, thank you. What's number 3?
Number 3, I have learned a lot about myself since working here and realized things that I want and I don't want.
That's priceless. Okay. Right. Like my ex-husband, who I was on lockdown with for too many years, one of my greatest teachers taught me like, oh, guess what, Liz? You have value. You have value. And then this person that I've been on and off again, I don't know what's going on right now, ironically with the same name as my ex-husband, is one of my greatest teachers because I had to dig deep to learn what it really means to love myself irrespective if I was in a relationship or not. I say thank you
I say thank you. My 16-year-old who makes me crazy, I say thank you because you're teaching me unconditional love. You follow what I'm saying?
Her call got
and
dropped.
Then
so
you're not judging.
But yeah.
Her call dropped?
Yeah.
But anyway, so I hope that, and we're going to wrap anyway, I hope that, you know, when you shift it, then you're in the driver's seat, you know, and then you're not judging and getting into ego, but you're going into the soul matrix of what all of this is leading you to the next thing. All right, so hopefully she heard that. We'll wrap, but I really appreciate that call.
Yeah.
Because it's all what we do with what's presented in front of us and how creative we can get with that. So if you all need to get a hold of us, you can send an email to loablend@gmail.com. And we're scheduled to be back on the air this coming Thursday at 8:30 a.m. United States Eastern Time. Stay safe. Take care of yourselves and each other. And as always, let the light do the work and to brighter days ahead. Love you.
Love you. Bye-bye.